Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is back. Score up to 70% off everything home and end summer with can't-miss surprise flash deals, all with fast shipping right to your doorstep. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 3rd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Red of Troy Radio, episode 547, coming to you on Wednesday, July 17th. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football, including look at some off-season narratives. We're going to rave about the launch of EA Sports College Football 25, and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy, email address, rainoftroyfanside.com, and our phone number, 818-643-7227, Suckowitz Bruin Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joining with my co-host here on the Rancho Studio in Los Angeles, Lisa D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, we're back. An hour earlier than normal, because we've got some stuff going on today, but it should be fun. We've made Wednesdays at 6 p.m. sort of our normal time. So we're kind of like back in the olden days at the 5 o'clock.
The good old 5 o'clock slot, prime time.
Yeah, exactly. And here we go. It is the best week of the year as far as I'm concerned. The launch of EA Sports, College Football 25. Alicia,
the best week of the last 11 years.
It might be. We are on day three now of the early launch period. You and I have both been addicted, spending all of our waking hours. You took the whole week off of work. I took a couple days off of work just to focus and dive in, start our dynasties. How are you enjoying it?
It's good. I've taken over Northern Illinois. We're going to be doing a big online dynasty, and I was going to do Northern Illinois there, so I sort of wanted to get a leg up by getting to know my program a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The game is hard for someone who hasn't really played a football video game in earnest since NCAA 14. So there's a learning curve there, but I'm enjoying it. It is everything I hoped it would be and more. I have that feeling in just my whole body that brings me back to the days of sitting on my parents' floor in the living room playing NCAA for hours and hours and hours when I could get away with it. So I'm super happy with this.
Yeah, it's super nice to have it back. Playing with friends. We're going to be gaming here on the YouTube channel tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Pacific. To be live head-to-head, you against me. We're each going to be SC. One of us will be home and one of us will be away. White against Cardinal, I guess. It'll be fun. So come join us live on YouTube. If you're new here, subscribe so that way you can access the stream a little bit easier. We'll probably be streaming, you know, semi-regularly often enough. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it goes.
And we have plans to stream, and we have plans to integrate some of the video game content into our approach to covering USC. Not that we want to overwhelm you all with college football video game stuff, but really substantively, I think this game is going to be a nice resource for us to be able to talk about the team, the season, and all of that. So it's going to be very, very exciting to have this new resource to refer to.
Yeah. So join us over on YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed. If the YouTube is a success, maybe we'll migrate over onto Twitch too. But for now, we're doing the good old YouTube. But Lisa, let's get into the news, shall we? Let's talk about Paul Finebaum. Can I just, you know, I want to share some live comments we've gotten here on YouTube. Roger Dodger, Paul would criticize Rod if he thought it would get him clicks and likes. I mean, I'm sure we're easy to criticize in some sense, but West Texas Mike says Paul Finebaum is probably just doing his job to keep recruits from leaving the South for SC. This, because we're talking about Paul Finebaum is the thumbnail here on YouTube. And Alicia, as you wrote in our rundown, Paul Finebaum is acting a fool.
Yeah.
Explain.
All right. So if the folks at home have not listened to what Paul Finebaum has had to say about Lincoln Riley, I'll sum it up for you. Basically, Lincoln Riley is the talk of SEC media days because, you know, USC and the SEC are totally, you know, relevant to each other. But Paul Finebaum has made it his mission to trash Lincoln Riley at every turn possible during SEC media days, including some of the more recent comments where he said that Lincoln Riley ran from the SEC. He had previously said that, I think we've talked about this, that USC, that Lincoln Riley's sort of window for success was already over at USC and that he expects him to be gone by the end of this year. Then this week he said that he accused him of running away from the SEC by going from Oklahoma to USC. And then, and I quote, "Last year was one of the worst coaching jobs I have ever seen. Quite frankly, if I was the athletic director at USC, I would have fired him." He goes on to say that Lincoln Riley doesn't know anything about defense and that he has, quote, gone through defensive coordinators, unquote, and that he doesn't have a clue and that he's not long for USC and he's basically an offensive coordinator and all of that. I have a lot of thoughts on this, so if you want to get in here.
I always think the gone through defensive coordinators thing is weird. Like, and Lincoln Riley brings on himself because, you know, the defenses haven't been good and he gave Alex Grinch too long of a leash, right? Like, and so obviously that's going to be part of the narrative, but like, I sometimes feel like I need to bring up a bullhorn and yell, there's only been one defensive coordinator that Lincoln Riley has hired who has ever coached a game with him. It's yep. Alex Grinch. He's never had another defensive coordinator coach a game with him yet until Danton Lynn, you know, lines up against LSU, right? Like, he inherited Mike Stoops, whom he fired and then promoted from within to replace Stoops mid-season in year, was that year one or year two? He went and got Alex Grinch. Like, his problem was that he stayed with Alex Grinch too long, which is a crime in of itself. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. But like this idea that like he runs through defensive coordinators or he doesn't know how to hire defensive coordinators, like the sample size is so small that like that's misguided. That might well be the case. It might be the case that he doesn't know how to hire defensive coordinators, and that's why he kept Grinch all along. Maybe that's what it is. But like, I don't know. Maybe I'm splitting hairs. Maybe this isn't the hill to die on. It's just a misnomer. And the idea that last year was one of the worst coached years that anyone has ever seen. Like, sure, anytime you lose, you know, five of the last six games, I think that you're going to get criticized, especially the way SC lost those games and then won games that they probably shouldn't. Sure, all that stuff is more than fair. But like we've talked about before, last season was the only time that Lincoln Riley has truly faced genuine adversity. And so it's on him to respond. And it's on USC to get better this year and show that they're above that and show that they can pick up the pieces. At the same time, it's one season out of, what, seven? Like, the track record on Lincoln Riley, more than not, is that he wins games. Like, until that changes, let's just see what happens. This is why I don't understand why an SEC homer like Paul Feinbaum is spending his time at SEC Media Days talking about SC. Like,
well, I know why.
I don't get it.
I know why. Because Paul Feinbaum is a hot take artist who knows he needs to poke certain buttons. And the buttons that he now gets to poke are existing in Norman, Oklahoma. He knows that if he says anything bad about Lincoln Riley, he's going to drum up Oklahoma fans. He's going to get them on his side. He's going to create conversation. He's going to sort of like stir that pot. So that's exactly why he's doing it. I sort of know the why, but I'm with you in that I don't want to defend the job that Lincoln Riley has done at USC because he has disappointed, certainly this past season, with certain decisions that he made specific to Alex Grinch, but also just the way that he managed the team this past year. It wasn't a good coaching job. It wasn't. I'm not going to sit here and say it was a good coaching job on his part. But also, as Rama Murthy pointed out, like, did he watch Clay Helton? Was he not around during the Clay Helton era? Like, you can't say that to fans who have literally lived through Clay Helton, who have literally lived through Lane Kiffin losing five of the last six games in 2012. Yeah. In an ending to a season that truly felt like the wheels were coming off in a completely different way than this past season, when, you know, Scott Frost exists. I think it's absurd to sort of be speaking with this type of hyperbole. I'm with you that the DC thing is just a complete, it's the new equivalent of USC paid Reggie Bush. It's just like this thing that people think they know, and then it's clear when they talk that way. It's like, you don't actually know what you're talking about there, though. And again, like, Athlon, I went back and looked, like, Athlon and many other publications and other places called Alex Grinch being hired as the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma as the number one coordinator hire of the year in 2019. Like, that was far and wide praised by the vast majority of people as a home run hire for Lincoln Riley. Obviously, it didn't work out. Obviously, something went wrong. Now, I think there's a valid conversation to be had about Lincoln Riley's teams and whether or not they are set up, whether on the practice field or in recruiting or in philosophy, to have defenses that function well. That is a question that I think gets answered a little bit more clearly with Danton Lynn coming in, because maybe Lincoln Riley ruined Alex Grinch. It's entirely possible. Sure. Maybe Lincoln Riley ruined Mike Stoops. It's entirely possible.
Is Grinch going to Wilcox?
I mean, that's the big question. But I'm glad you brought up Wilcox, though, because this conversation about Lincoln Riley and sort of the he doesn't care about defense and, you know, he's terrible. He's not going to succeed at USC and all this kind of stuff. Like, I keep going back to Lincoln Riley was hired very young to coach a very stable program that was already winning, and he just had to keep the ball rolling, and he kept the ball rolling, and they kept winning.
Yeah.
The job he took at USC, a similarly prestigious, more prestigious program, but a program that was not stable in any sense of the word, that was needed a complete rebuild in many areas, and just needed to be completely overhauled in pretty much everything else. And it's a different undertaking, and this is a challenge that he accepted for himself, and that we need to see whether or not he can complete this challenge. But it is absurd to turn around and say that he is incapable of completing this challenge when he's 40 years old. Like you said, it's the first taste of adversity he had in terms of things going catastrophically wrong. And I say catastrophically, accepting that like 8-5 is not catastrophic in the grand scheme of things. But things went catastrophically wrong for him for the first time in his head coaching career. Yeah. And we have to see how he responds. But like, he's 40 years old. He's still very young in his coaching career. At 40, what was, for instance, Steve Sarkisian, a head coach who is succeeding at Texas that I think Paul Feinbaum mm-hmm. thinks very highly of, that everyone thinks is doing a great job of having Texas, you know, with a well-rounded program that can defense, that can offense, that can do everything. At 40, Steve Sarkisian was taking over USC and fielding a very flawed 9-4 football team that was very good at offense and incomprehensibly not good at defense. Welcome back to Would You Rather with Rain of Troy. I'm your host, Alicia. Let's begin, Michael. Would you rather cuddle a hungry tiger or eat honeydew?
Well, that's easy. I don't think there's anything worse than a ripe honeydew.
You are so weird. How about would you rather floss with an electric eel or switch cell phone providers?
Give me the eel.
Oh, come on.
You know how much of a pain it is to switch providers?
Okay, let me rephrase. Floss with an electric eel or switch to Mint Mobile.
Wait, Mint? I mean, well, that changes everything.
Exactly. Mint is a whole different animal than the other providers.
Well, yeah, you can switch all online and bring your own phone along for the ride.
Even your contacts.
And my half-charged battery.
So you're saying the electric eel is back in play then?
No, I'm going to take Mint. It's easy and it's only $15 a month for the nation's largest 5G network.
That's what I thought. Mint it is. And for the Robots at home, go grab Mint's new customer offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month. Go to mintmobile.com/Troy. That's mintmobile.com/Troy.
Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Troy.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on the first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Yeah.
Not as bad as the defense has been over the last like 5 years, but right. Justin Wilcox's defenses at USC never made sense because he was a good defensive coordinator. He's been a great defensive coordinator since. But something about that didn't work. It just didn't work at USC. Was that Steve Sarkisian not knowing how to find a balance between the offense that he knows and the defense that that sort of balance the head coach? Maybe it was, but the point is that coaches learn and grow and get better, and the great ones learn from their mistakes. And Lincoln Riley has that opportunity. It's just, yeah. We don't know where he goes from here. I'm not going to say 1,000,000% that he's going to become a super success and work through his issues and that he's going to make the changes that are necessary to become a national title contender at USC. I'm not going to predict that he's going to do that, but I'm also not going to predict that he's going to absolutely fail and that he can't defense at all. And, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I think it's crazy that this is the conversation that we're having coming out of year two of Lincoln Riley, with one really good year and one bad year, and the third year still to come. Like, I just think it's kind of absurd. Not just kind of absurd. It is flagrantly absurd to be having this conversation the way that Paul Feinbaum is having this conversation.
Yeah. In the chat, DP 1988 says the track record is that he doesn't care about defense, and then he's always the bridesmaid, never the bride. He can never make it to the Natty game itself. Sure. Yeah, I think that when you allow Grinch to be around as long as he did, that's what is going to be out there. That's going to allow that narrative to sort of live. But I would also say, isn't that predominantly the narrative for most coaches in college football that are not named
Kirby Smart?
Kirby Smart at this point? But Mike Gundy. Is Mike Gundy a respected coach? I think so. What has Mike Gundy ever done? How is Mike Gundy any different?
Mm-hmm.
James Franklin. How is James Franklin any different? Dave Doran. Mark Stoops.
Kyle Whittingham, who I respect immensely.
Kyle Whittingham, you can't say the defensive thing, but I think Kyle Whittingham has outproduced his talent and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, but coaches who haven't gotten to a national championship game, who don't necessarily always have the most balance of squads, who,
right.
you know, all of these things. I think this is nationwide, this is a problem. I mean, Ohio State fans want Ryan Day gone. Michigan fans were ready to run Jim Harbaugh out of town.
Jim Harbaugh, always a bridesmaid. Bridesmaids never the bride.
All of this.
Until last season, right? Yeah.
I also reject this idea that Lincoln Riley doesn't care about defense. I don't think there's any chance that any head coach in major college football doesn't care about defense.
No, I think his offenses were good enough to enable not being critical on defense.
That's exactly what I think. I think Lincoln Riley's offenses have been a crutch to his defenses.
You know what it is?
So long that he's been able to win so many games on offense that he's been able to talk himself out of being more direct, being more ruthless, being more insistent upon greatness on the defensive side of the ball. He needs to change that. He needs to get better at that. That's going to be the number one thing that goes into him changing, is being more capable of identifying when a level of performance is unacceptable.
Yeah.
That's something that he hasn't shown that he can do, but he needs to figure that out. But the point being that part of Lincoln Riley's problem is not that he doesn't care about defense. It's that he's so good at offense that he hasn't had catastrophic failure the way that he did this past year.
He hasn't been actionable on the defense. And I think that, allow this for a comparison. Ryan loves the food restaurant analogies. Food restaurant, that's a weird thing
food
to say.
Yeah, food analogies.
Here's a financial analogy. Not based on anyone in particular, and certainly not myself. But Lincoln Riley, is the way he looks at defense is the guy who doesn't look at his bank account.
Yeah.
And never overdrafts. Everything is never overdrafts, so you never have to worry. Never has an issue, except that one time your AAA accounts is going to renew, and it happens 2 days before your paycheck, and then all of a sudden you end up overdrafting. Again, not that this has ever happened to me or anything. And then you're damn, I should have been looking the whole time, when in the reality you were doing something not necessarily prudent the whole time, but you were enabled by not having the thing hit the fan, right? Now it has hit the fan to the point where it has to be the reckoning.
Either he's going to be able
to conquer this or not.
We've had reckonings in the past where we were like, oh, wait, you know what? We need to go through all of our subscriptions and get rid of our subscriptions that have just been
not
sitting there.
Not that this has ever happened to us.
No. I mean, we...
Our friends, apparently.
We have an endless bank account that never comes into...
Exactly.
Yeah, all of that. Our friends may have... gone into a situation where they realized that maybe they were overextended financially. Right. Maybe they needed to look at areas where they could cut back and realize that they were paying for a lot of stuff that they didn't realize they were paying for. Yeah. And as soon as they got rid of all that stuff, suddenly the financial burden was a hell of a lot less, because guess what? They weren't using, you know, Peacock or Paramount Plus every week or whatever. Oh, you know, I'll just, you know, whatever this going off the rails. But I want to highlight comments from Johnny Johnson and Jeff Rodriguez in the chat, where Johnny says, evidence that he cares about defense. He fired Mike Stoops in the middle of the season and hired the best available defensive coordinator in Alex Grinch, who was the hot name at the time. Bingo. Jeff says there's no evidence other than paying for Lynn, Bell, Kenny, and Entz. Bingo. I think that when you look at it, it's very clear to me the way that the search went on. USC tried to go out and get a bigger fish than Danton Lynn and whiffed. I don't necessarily care so much about the whiffing so much as I do, are you trying? Are you actually trying to get like some big names? And it would seem to me that they did.
Yeah.
They settle on Danton Lynn, who is a very good choice to settle on, given the context of what he was able to do at UCLA, because it's exactly what USC needs to happen here. And then also the assistant staff, and we have said this the whole way through, this is a supremely overqualified staff.
Right.
Like, it is absurd how overqualified the people on USC's defensive staff are. Does that mean they're going to be, you know, turn USC into an elite defense? I don't know. We're going to find out.
Right.
But you can't accuse Lincoln Riley of not caring about defense when, if he didn't care about defense, he could have just gotten Danton Lynn and then picked up a bunch of scraps and just said, oh, we've got the DC. Let's just roll.
Right.
Instead, they went on, got Danton Lynn, and then went out and hired an all-star cast of assistant coaches who are no doubt making very good money in order to be at USC in positions that they are overqualified for.
I think one of the hilarious things to me, the irony of this about, you know, going out and hiring the names that, you know, outside of Danton Lynn, who Danton Lynn is someone I think that we all see the upside in. Absolutely. He wasn't Jim Leonard, right? Who had the longer track record,
mm-hmm.
but he's a guy who people wanted, right? He was a guy who was a commodity, and all those other guys are overqualified in their positions, like we talked about. The irony to me is that, like, looking back at the Pete Carroll era, I think sort of proves A, how college football has changed, but B, how literally everything comes down to just winning.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that, like, you know, Lincoln Riley doesn't care about defense because of all of these things. Have you ever talked about those things in reference to what Pete Carroll did? Who did he ever hire defensively? Like, nobody, because he was the defensive guy. Did he care about defense? Obviously, because he was the defensive guy. But, like, he let all of his staff leave over the entirety of his tenure, to the point that there was brain drain, and you started with Rocky Seto as a grad assistant at the beginning. He ends up being the defensive coordinator in 2009, and it was the inverse. You had a bunch of guys who were underqualified for all of their spots because Pete Carroll didn't go out and hire the top names at the positions and go out and get good staffs underneath him, because he didn't need to. He kept winning. It's a lot similar. And I think that,
like, and the first time Pete Carroll hired an offensive coordinator from outside of his program, it was Jeremy Bates. And
yes,
God, that was a disaster.
John Morton. Yeah. It's a weird thing. Like, when you win, winning covers up everything. Winning covers up so many different things. And for Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, he was able to win so much to the point that he was able to not have to worry about making those decisions on defense that he probably should have made. Absolutely. And same thing for Pete Carroll. So here we are, going into the 2024 season. Those are the narratives that Paul Feinbaum is throwing around. Let's talk about the Big Ten. You were over on the Crack 12 podcast, our Oregon Duck friends, and
You sort of made a remark about USC's opponents at quarterback. And then our friend Hithloday put together some stats. What do you got?
Yeah, so basically Hithloday and I were talking about... Quack 12 does a very in-depth roster preview of every opponent. And so I go on there. I've been on there a few years now and have a very in-depth conversation with Hithloday about the roster, the depth chart, everything like that. So go check that out when it posts. But we were talking about how the defense was just god-awful in 2023, and it didn't necessarily make sense how bad they were, but that one of the things that might be at play there is simply that USC's schedule was hurt, like, was just, if you ever wanted to set up a defense to be just wrung dry, it was this schedule with these quarterbacks that USC played this past year. And the one of the biggest changes that you might see just defensively without any actual improvement is simply playing a hell of a lot worse quarterbacks across the board. We've talked about this, that the quarterbacks on USC's current schedule is very difficult for different reasons, but the quarterbacks are not the area where the difficulty happens. And so I mentioned that, and Hithloday went and charted it and looked it up to sort of see if we could back up my observation. And he tweeted that I speculated that no USC team no team that USC would face in 2024 would field a quarterback that would make the top five of those that the Trojans faced in 2023. Hithloday says she was right, and then some. None of them would make the top 11 of the last 2 years combined. That is the difference of quarterback talent, at least going into the season, from what we can project. That is the difference of what USC will be facing this coming year versus the last 2 years of a ironically resurgent Pac-12 in terms of quality of quarterback play. The other thing that Hithloday tweeted that I thought was really interesting, because both of these sort of feed into a sense of optimism about the defense for this coming year. He tweeted USC's rankings in the 24/7 team composite, talent composite, versus the F-plus defense rating. And he went back from 2015, so that was Wilcox, to 2023, so the end of Grinch. And the composite talent line is pretty steady. It does take a dip over the last 5 years or so, but it's pretty steady up in sort of the top 15. The F-plus line starts out slightly under the yellow line, but then it just dips and dips and dips until it absolutely craters in the final year of Clay Helton under Todd Orlando and both years under Alex Grinch. Like, it is a descent going down, which to me says that, which I observed this on Twitter, the good news about this, as ugly as that chart looks, and I would encourage you all to go to Twitter to look at, I retweeted, if you want to go to @PenguinOtroy to look at it. The good news there is that USC does not have a talent deficiency, does not and has not ever had a talent deficiency relative to the performance of the defenses over the last few years. What USC has had is a performance deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Danton Lynn steps into a program that still has plenty of talent, and we know what happened the last time he stepped into a program that had some dormant talent on UCLA, and he rolled with them. The part of my conversation with Hithloday did hit on my biggest anxiety about Danton Lynn coming to USC, in that Danton Lynn inherited elite pass rushers like Leatu Latu and the Murphy twins. And I'm not certain that USC has that level of talent available to it today. But Danton Lynn will get to prove whether or not he can sort of find those areas where he can get a hell of a lot more out of that talent, because that's exactly what he did with UCLA. And it's, you know, the bar has been set very low at USC recently.
Yeah, you talk about the problem is not the talent, it's the performance. And so We got a comment in the chat that mentions Oklahoma under Lincoln Riley, a very, you know, similar thing, obviously. From DP 1988, can you even name an Oklahoma defensive player under Lincoln Riley? I can only think of one guy, and he isn't doing that well, by the way. So I went to Wikipedia, good old Wikipedia, pulled up the draft results from the Oklahoma Sooners. I'm going to throw them on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. Of the 20, 21, and 22 draft classes in the NFL, look, so these are guys that Lincoln Riley essentially recruited, right? Because those would be classes of after he was there for a while, all that stuff. Let's look at all the defensive players. Third rounder, Neville Gallimore in 2020. 2021, there's Ronnie Perkins, a third rounder. Trey Brown, a fourth rounder. Trey Norwood, a seventh rounder. 2022 has two linebackers, Nick Benito and Brian Asamoah, in the second and third round. Fourth round defensive tackle, Perrion Winfrey. Fourth round, Delarian Turner-Yell at DB. Seventh rounder, Isaiah Thomas to the Browns. So for this whole argument that Lincoln Riley doesn't give a shit about defense, he's got a lot of defensive talent there. And it goes back to the thought that you just put out that, like, it is coaching. It is the lack of ability to get the most out of those guys. It's not the lack of talent. It's not the lack of players. And I think that part of it does go into the fact that when you are in an offensive conference where the entire strategy of the Big 12 is to outscore your opponents, and to win that way was something that Lincoln Riley was able to do, I think it makes it easy to try to play that way in the Pac-12 too, which sort of backfired absolutely last year, right? But this goes to show that, like, there was talent there, right? It was the lack of ability to actually do something with the talent, which again goes back to the problem that SC has now, which is why you make all the changes going into this season. So yeah, it doesn't look good, but it doesn't mean that there's no ability to get around it, because there's talent there, right? There's been talent there, which makes it more of an indictment on the coaching of anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that was the biggest frustration of the past 2 years. It's that, you know, maybe in 2021, I would have bought a question about USC not necessarily having enough good players on defense.
Yeah.
By 2022, 2023, we were looking at those rosters, those defensive depth charts, and they looked great. They looked perfectly fine. This year's defensive depth chart, I have a major, major concern with depth on the defensive line. And the one position that I think USC is sorely lacking is a true nose tackle. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, they have DBs. They have an overabundance of safeties and corners. They have brought in some hopefully very capable linebackers.
Yeah.
They have edge rushers. You know the defense in competent hands will be at least fine and not catastrophic the way it has been.
How many times have we said that going into a game, would you trade rosters with this team? No.
No.
And more often than not, that becomes a discussion, because that is how many of those Utah teams would you trade rosters with? A lot of them you wouldn't at all. Like, even though SC is not getting the most out of their defense, man for man, that you have talent there that you wish you were getting more out of at some point. So, all right, let's go to, we got to move on and go to our weekly segments on the Big Ten as we get closer and closer to the Big Ten season. Big Ten Media Day is coming up next week. And we've only got a few more of these Big Ten minutes this week on Penn State.
A Big Ten Minutes.
All right, let's learn about the Pennsylvania State University, founded in 1855 as the Farmers High School of Pennsylvania. Yes.
That's lovely.
Yeah. Penn State, I think, might have my favorite list of former names.
Farmers High School of Pennsylvania, Agricultural College of Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania State College, Dickinson School of Law, the Chestnut Street Female Seminary, the Ogden School for Girls, Wyomissing Polytechnic Institute, Pennsylvania State Forest Academy. All of those things were either the university itself or folded into the university at some point. It's wild.
That's a lot. A
lot of stuff going on.
A lot of great names in there.
Yeah. Of course, Pennsylvania State University is in State College, Pennsylvania. They're the Nittany Lions. Why are they the Nittany Lions? Because in 1904, PSU student Joe Mason went to a baseball game in Princeton. He was not happy. He's like, how are these guys named the Tigers? And, well, we don't have anything that can beat a tiger. So he created this sort of semi-mythical cat called the Nittany Lion. The fiercest beast of them all, he said. It could beat a Princeton tiger. And so according to PSU.edu, the Nittany Lion is essentially an ordinary mountain lion, also known as a cougar, puma, or panther, a creature that roamed central Pennsylvania until the 1880s, although unconfirmed sightings have continued long after that time. By attaching the prefix Nittany to this beast, Penn State got a unique symbol that no other college or university could claim because Mount Nittany is right there. So,
there you go. Did not realize that a Nittany lion did not exist.
Well, like, it's one of those things, like, it doesn't exist, but, like, it doesn't not exist.
I mean, it's a mountain lion that they named after Nittany, which I didn't know was a place, and now I know.
A Nittany lion itself is, like, not a thing.
Yeah. Which, good for them, because there are too many wildcats and cougars in sports.
Yes.
So good for them.
And it sounds cool, the Nittany lions. Like, yeah.
My only problem with Nittany lion is I always forget if it's two T's or two N's.
Yeah, Nittany Lions.
Nittany Lions.
It's one of those things that would be great with a British accent. The Nittany Lions Nittany of Penn Lions. State.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be great. Here's a weird Penn State fact. We got two of them today. Every year, Penn State hosts Thon. They couldn't come up with a better name, like Thon. Just Thon.
Like Marathon?
Yes, but it's just Thon. It's Thong without the G, Thon, which is a fundraiser to fight childhood cancer. Awesome. That they're able to do that thing. Childhood cancer, not awesome. But students must remain standing inside the basketball arena for 46 straight hours. What do you think? Do you be down?
There's gotta be an easier way to raise money to fight childhood cancer, folks. Why do you need to make it so hard?
It shouldn't
be like, just do a damn walkathon.
Well, this is
why
they
couldn't have people sign up for laps.
They couldn't think of
46 hours.
After 46 hours, they were too tired to come up with a name like Standathon. It just became Thon. There's musical acts that show up for Thon. There's dance routines, comedians, all that type of stuff that keeps the kids entertained. It's a big dance party, basically. For 46 hours, which is insane. I want to know, like, I haven't looked into this. I probably should. What's going on in the Monday after that weekend at school? Like, is the Monday off?
There's no way you can be a functional student for at least a week after being awake for 46 straight hours.
No.
Like, that is detrimental to one's health.
No, I would like to play, you know, EA College Football for 46 straight hours.
I know you would try if you could, Michael. I know you would try, but even you know that staying awake for 46 hours is just a bad idea.
I don't know. The other Penn State facts. Penn State's is the most recent college football team and the second to last university to ever put names on the back of their jerseys. They did it in 2012 under Bob O'Brien, Bill O'Brien. Wrong Bob. He is Bob. It was a good thing for them to put the names on the back.
I get why.
It recognized those who didn't transfer away after the Sandusky sanctions and all that stuff, right? I think that's a logical thing to do.
I've been saying for a while, gear up, guys, because NIL means that USC will have names on the back of the jersey sooner than later.
So it means SC is now the only school in college football who has never done it once. Notre Dame, of course, does it for bowl games. Penn State did it for for the post sanctions era.
USC has
never done it.
I do like it for bowl games. If USC were to do it, I think doing it for a bowl game is something I could get behind.
Yeah. Let's get to the fight song, and this is going to be a contentious one because Alicia, their fight song is called "Fight On State."
A lot of fight ons in
fight
the Big
on
Ten.
State. Go, fight on state. Go. Strike your gates and win. Let's go, state. Victory we predict for thee. We're ever true to you, dear old white and blue. Onward, state, go. Onward, state, go. Roar, lions, roar. Let's go, state. We'll hit that line, roll up the score. Fight on to victory evermore. Fight on. Fight on, Penn State. STATE, go state.
A lot of fight on to victory, fight on, you know, all these things.
Yeah. It's all there.
Does Pennsylvania State University,
The Pennsylvania State University,
do they do a Penn State spell out? Because STATE is easy, but can they do
P-E-N-N-S-O-Y-L-V-N-A-I. See, I can't even do it.
Yeah.
Anyways, notable alums. How about Louis Astronino, the architect of PNC Park, or Stanley Cole, the architect of Citizens Bank Park, both ballparks in the state of Pennsylvania, designed by Penn Staters. Herman Fisher, the co-founder of Fisher Price, went to Penn State. Richard T. James, the inventor of the Slinky, went to PSU. Terry Pegula and the Pegula family, they're big Penn Staters, the owner of the Bills and the Sabres. Ty Burrell, the actor, the dad on Modern Family. How about John Aniston? Victor on Days?
Good old Days of Our Lives. Yeah. My grandma's favorite soap opera that she got me hooked on when I went to live with her.
Yeah. Howard Hamlin from Better Call Saul.
Hey!
Penn Stater. Keegan-Michael Key from Key & Peele. Benji from The Howard Stern Show. Lisa Salters from ESPN was a Penn State women's basketball player. And Tom Verducci, the baseball reporter from SI, also a Penn Stater. When you think
no serial killers?
I didn't.
At least not that they named on their Wikipedia. Well,
there's somebody else we could name that I think we're going to stay monetized and not name.
Yes.
A city in Ohio shares the name. Let's go to your perception of Penn State fans. What do you got?
Rabid. I've always heard that going to Beaver Stadium is an experience if you are an away fan.
Yeah, I would love to
white
see
it. Whiteouts are one of there. The great college football traditions.
Yes.
Like just beyond one of the best.
Yeah, Penn State fans extremely loyal. If there is a culty fan base of the Big Ten, I think it's Penn State.
I feel that. Yeah.
It's got a little bit of the Texas A&M-ish vibes to it. In a good way. I mean it in a good way. First athletes I come to think of is LeVar Arrington jumping over that line against Minnesota. Larry Johnson, Franco Harris, Daryl Clark, Derek Williams, all famous Penn State football players. They have won only 2 national championships and only 4 Big Ten titles, but that, of course, because they didn't join the Big Ten until 1991. All-time series against USC, 6-4 in favor of the Trojans. They played in the first ever USC Rose Bowl, 1923. The Trojans won 14-3. And, of course, we always remember the 2017 Rose Bowl, which USC won 52-49. There was also the 2009 Rose Bowl. You might remember the game in which Taylor Mays absolutely murdered his teammate Kevin Thomas and Jordan Norwood a little bit too.
The receiver. Yeah. Taylor Mays, who would have racked up the targeting ejections.
Yeah, just a little bit. USC and Penn State lock and horns Saturday, October 12th. Penn State, also known as Chalk U, they went 10-3 last year. They're only 3 losses to the 3 ranked teams that they faced. But they go into this year with 16 returning starters. That's Penn State.
Hit the post.
Bam. Barely got in there. I didn't even have time to go down to talk about James Franklin and his 2-13 record against ranked teams on the road. So if SC wants to beat Penn State, the key is to be ranked.
when Penn State comes to town.
Yes, yeah. On October 12th.
Yes.
Be ranked. That is the key. Let's go to the
mailbag. You've got mail.
All right, let's start with an email that we got from Brett. What did Brett have to say? My 11-year-old son has been playing EA College Football 25 all day, and I hopped on to play and checked his stats. Not sure what happened, but Carson Tabarachi won the Heisman. So if he wins, I want a shout out. I didn't know who else to send this to. Fight on, Brett. And then sent the picture of, yeah, there you go, Carson Tabarachi winning the Heisman Trophy. Second place Miller Moss, third place Zachariah Branch over Will Howard and Troy Stiletto from Clemson is the fifth place guy. But
Brett,
Carson Tabarachi, last game against Maryland, which was won 118-28. Jesus Christ. 17 catches, 140 yards, and a touchdown for Carson Tabarachi.
So, number one, Brett, your son is living my dream. A USC tight end winning the Heisman. If you had told me someone was going to win the Heisman with a tight end in a USC tight end in this video game, I would not have banked on it being Carson Tabarachi either. That is absolutely incredible. This reminds me, I need to make much better use of my tight end for Northern Illinois in my dynasty because he's one of my best players.
Yeah, you got to use
him. And I need to just use him more often. Number three. One of the things that I really have wanted to do with a college football video game, and now we're going to be able to, it's probably going to be like an off-season project more than anything, is like make videos doing those like challenges where it's like, I'm going to see if I can win the national title. Well,
only throwing to tight ends?
Only completing passes to tight ends, or like only running with the fullback, or, putting like... limitations on the way that you do it and sort of see what happens there. So maybe I'll set out a goal to do a season where I only target USC tight ends. That would be very fun. But I will say I've only played as USC a couple of times now. We're going to play USC versus USC tomorrow, you and I on live stream. But
yeah, 8 p.m. Pacific.
I enjoy playing with Miller Moss, certainly relative to my Northern Illinois quarterback. And Zachariah Branch is great, but Deuce Robinson is a beast in that game. And it's making me very, very excited.
Zachariah Branch is incredible.
Yes.
Very speedy.
Very,
well, we
very
say
fast.
Tomorrow that we're gaming Thursday night. So if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, it's tonight. So join us over on YouTube's tonight. All right, let's rapid fire the questions we got on the YouTubes. Cameron says, when are USC podcasts going to get Paul Feinbaum on their shows?
I don't know that he wants to face the music over here.
Let's be honest. I don't know that I have it in me, the energy to keep talking about him.
I know that I don't.
I don't.
No.
I don't. It's the off season, folks. There's not a lot going on. Like, what else are we going to talk about here? Mm-hmm. Let's go to a question from Jeff. It's not just a Riley Love Fest. The man is a terrible communicator with the media.
I think that is one of Lincoln Riley's bigger flaws. I think his media policies do him more harm than good. I think he shoots himself in his foot,
mm-hmm.
Shoots his players in their foot sometimes with the way that that USC approaches media. So that's something I wish that he would sort of mature about.
Yeah. Artist formerly known as Jabroni Jabber Brody, our favorite Canadian. Will we be seeing a Rot RTG with the Trojan of the Past? I would love to do one of those.
That would be super fun.
Should we do one with Lendak? Should we create Lendak?
Oh, you know somebody's already going to create Lendak. Are they? I don't know. I don't think they're doing create a player, though.
But for the Road to Glory, you create a player.
Oh, that's true. You do it for...
Yeah.
You can't add them to your rosters in Dynasty. That's what I was thinking of.
No, but you can... Let's find a way to do the Road to Glory and... do a little bit of Lendak, and that'll be fun.
Gotta create some Lendak magic.
Yeah. Ferris says, will traditional Big Ten teams like Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio State take over the Coliseum with fans making a vacation trip to LA? I think so in a yes. I think especially because we know that they travel to the Rose Bowl very well. They're only coming to LA once every couple years because there's so many teams in the conference.
Even more,
they're
more
not
than,
playing SC and UCLA in yeah. the same season. So I think that's going to allow them to allow this to be sort of like a snowbirdy trip for some people.
I think the turnout for those teams will be excellent. Mm-hmm. It's up to USC to decide whether or not they take over the Coliseum, though.
So Notre Dame tends to, when Notre Dame's good, but like I'm talking about like 2012 Notre Dame.
Yeah.
But that's also because Notre Dame is, you know, circle jerk here, a national program. Notre Dame, BYU, Army, Navy, et cetera, like sort of they have people everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And you can sort of see it that way. And I think that there will be some of that because there's a lot of people from Big Ten schools
that live here
that are transplants. Yeah, but they're going to be here too.
As Kenny says in the chat, USC fans will also show up to those games because exactly like now, like Wisconsin, Nebraska, maybe not, but like Ohio State, Michigan, any of those big name teams, USC fans, for all my complaints about USC fans, like when there's a big ticket in town, you like that's what gets people going in Los Angeles. So, I think that those will be hot tickets, and I think that USC fans will have representation, whether or not they show up for all of the games or not.
Yeah, for sure. Ron Murdy says, "What do you eat on Big Ten Media Days? Double stacked lasagnas?" So Big Ten Media Days is in
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis, yeah.
Which we will not be going to, sadly.
We will not be there. I wish we were, but we will not be there. Is Indianapolis famous for something?
Food-wise? Not that immediately comes to mind.
I can't think of anything, because when I think of Big Ten country and food stuff, we're talking about stuff in Chicago, right? Like Portillo's, like getting the Italian beef, right? Like in the chat, okay, Ferris so says this, Detroit pizza.
This
I do like Detroit pizza, very good.
Onlyinyourstate.com says everyone in Indianapolis absolutely loves these 10 foods and drinks. Uh-oh. Number one is a tenderloin sandwich. It's a classic Hoosier sandwich. Breaded and grilled, this thin pork patty is the unofficial food of the entire state. I would house this.
So it's a pork burger, essentially.
It's chicken fried pork is what it looks like.
Yeah. As the Brits would call it, a pork burger. Since, you know, they don't call chicken sandwiches, they're chicken burgers.
Yeah. Milkshakes or ice cream from Trader's Point Creamery. Fried pickles, pass. Country fried steak. Craft beer.
Love country fried steak.
Sugar cream pie.
Okay.
Square donuts.
What?
Square donuts.
Huh?
Any true indie Hoosier knows the best donuts are squares.
What the hell is a square donut?
It's literally a square.
Is it just like a sopapilla?
It's a donut, but it's a square. This looks like a box of donuts, like chocolate covered sprinkles.
It's a sopapilla that's glazed with chocolate on it.
No, there's like a hole
in
the middle, too.
It's just cultural appropriation. It's just sopapillas.
Whatever. Pulled pork, chili, popcorn. These are the 10 foods that are beloved by Indianapolis.
Yeah, I think we're better off not going. No offense. Ohio, like Cincinnati is famous for the Skyline Chili. Have you seen that stuff? Disgusting. They put it on like on spaghetti. Mm. Gag. Kill me now. Can't do it.
Never had it.
No. Square donuts. What?
They're just donuts that are square, and apparently they fit in the box better.
Bullshit. Like,
what'd they say?
First of all, the most batshit food city is St. Louis. St. Louis pizza is literally on a cracker. And then you've seen the St. Louis bagel, right?
No.
Have you not seen a St. Louis bagel?
No.
Oh my God, Alicia, please.
Am I looking this up?
Please look it up. Please look it up.
St. Louis bagel.
Look this up.
Wait, they cut it?
They
slice it.
They slice it like it's bread. Yes.
Why?
Yes, I
If you're watching here on YouTube, I will throw a picture up.
Why?
Here.
Why? What is the per? What? The ba- But what's the point of it being a bagel then?
I
don't.
St. Louis. There's a reason Chicago ships the sewage water to St. Louis. I get nothing. So. All right. St. Louis style ribs. Not a fan either. I don't want something saucy. Give me Texas style. Where sauce adjacent, not sauce plentiful.
I like saucy. It just has to be a good sauce. And that's the problem, is sometimes you don't get a good sauce.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow night. Thursday night, 8 p.m. Pacific. On YouTube, streaming the video game. Until then, we'll be back next week as well with a new pod. So
we'll be streaming. We'll be answering questions. We'll be having a chat. Come hang out. It'll be a good time.
Yeah. Until then, we'll see ya. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.